The sound of the waves and scent of the sea filled the air. Breezes fluttered through the transparent curtains. It was not yet sunset, but the sun was sinking over the western horizon, painting the sky in brilliant orange. Never had Yvonne seen anything of the like, yet she could not bask in the beauty before her, not when the danger her brother posed was so near. She would be a fool to take her eyes from him. Cadus indicated that they settle at the table, which was shaped in a deep crescent that allowed everyone a view of the sea and of each other. The prince sat at the head, facing full west. Madoc took the seat between her and the prince. Gareth and Bazir sank into the cushions at the other side. She was glad to see the fish brought in and prepared nearby, their meal still flopping as it went beneath the cook's knife and onto the coals. She caught Madoc's eye and grinned.
"You will not leave so hungry now, I think," he said.
She sat opposite Bazir and gave him a thin smile as he sipped from a goblet of wine, looking pleased with himself, as well he might be. "What lies did you tell them, brother?" she asked lightly. "They look at me as if I am a demon incarnate." There was suddenly such delicate, frozen wariness in the prince's and minister's expressions, Yvonne realized she had aimed perfectly without even intending. And Bazir was clever and persuasive, but had not much original thought. In his attack tonight, he likely meant to copy their father's way of discrediting Madoc's father, and now Bazir copied the story that Jalin had used to destroy every strong house within Sissia. "Is that the tale you spun to them?" She laughed and addressed the prince and Gareth, who sat nearer to each other. When asked why he kept his sister imprisoned in the tower, he must have spun the same lie our father did after he poisoned our mother. For our father claimed that after our mother slew the demon who reanimated Queen Venus, the demon then possessed her. But now the story is that I am the possessed daughter. With a heavy sigh, Bazir sank deeper into his cushion, regarding her with a sorrowful stare that he could only hold a moment before averting his eyes and addressing Cadus and Gareth.
"I told you that she would use truth to speak lies."
Eating his fish with his fingers, Madoc grunted beside her, a sound of deep laughter, as if amused that her brother gave them the same warning she'd given him. Bazir's gaze shot to him. Leaning forward, he said in a grave voice,
"I have already told the others what happened to our beloved mother, but you have been in Yvonne's presence these many days and under her influence, so it is no surprise that you take her side. You and I have no love for each other, but listen and you will see how she has twisted truth."
"Do not open your ears to him, Madoc. Nothing he says will deserve the respect of your hearing," Yvonne said, and knew the frustration of even that sounding through her brother's frame, as if she feared that Madoc might see through her deceptions. Eyes gleaming, Bazir knew it too.
"You do not want him to hear how it was our mother who took the poison herself, so that if the demon inside her gained hold of her, it would never have the strength that her demon queen mother did? Years she spent battling that evil inside her, locking herself away to keep safe her sons and her people, and my father ruled with her blessing."
"He poisoned her wine with fel root," Yvonne said flatly. "It was not a demon's evil that kept her trapped in that tower. Instead, it was his greed and ambition."
"The corrupt greed of the man who refused reward after he smote the smiling giant? The selfish ambition of the man who risked his own life to hold the line at the Fourth Ridge? You would cast such aspersions on an honored warrior?"
"As he ruined the name of Ran Merrick with his false accusations," she said, then looked to Madoc, hoping her brother's words were not provoking him to anger. He seemed to be not even listening. Calmly, he ate his fish.
"That is only partial truth."
With an expression of soul-deep pain, Bazir sat back, his gaze returning to Madoc.
"Did you never question why a woman born of a legendary line of warrior queens, each one tall as Rani herself and possessing the strength of 10 men, was so weak and small? It is because her own mother recognized what was growing in her womb and took the half-moon milk before it was fully formed, and when the babe emerged with its heart still beating, our mother attempted to strangle her."
Such an unbelievable collection of lies, such a ridiculous story. Yet that was what made it so believable, too. Not for one moment would anyone suspect that a member of the Alliance Council would spout such an outlandish tale unless it held truth, for Bazir's own standing would be forever ruined if the story was exposed as false. And if he had simply called her afflicted, her own manner could persuade Cadus and Gareth to her truth. But now her every denial could be read as confirmation through the veil of his lies. Yet it must be denied. "If our mother ever intended to kill me, she would have used her teeth to rip out my throat, as she did to our father as he raped her.
What story would you give to Iskar?
He would give no story to it because he was still continuing his own.
It was my father who saved the weakling demon babe,
he said to Matic, who still calmly ate his fish, not even tearing it apart, but taking small bites of the delicate flesh.
Fool that he is, but he saw her moonstone eyes and believed she might be the true heir to the Sisian throne, and he believed that perhaps my mother was mistaken, or that the demon still resided in my mother, and through her had meant to strangle the true heir. But my mother was not mistaken, and all that she could do in her weakened, poisoned body was to curb the demon's schemes, and so she did, until her tragic death.
Such hatred filled Yvain then that she shook with it. Yet her brother did not make the claim she expected him to, a truth wrapped in lies and so painful that she could not even speak to Matic of that day.
That was when she sent the message to your mother and father, Bazir continued with a look of guilt. And there our lies to the Alliance Council began, because my father thought if we now revealed that my mother had birthed a daughter with moonstone eyes, our people would be so hungry to see Nyset's heir on the throne that they would not let themselves see her true nature. But your parents saw that nature, Commander. She lured them with a sad tale of abuse and imprisonment, but as soon as my father led them to her, so they might see with their own eyes what she was, they recognized the same demon they'd fought a generation ago. That your father attacked a woman of our household was not a lie. We only hid the truth of who that woman was.
Ran Merrick attacked no one, Yvain said fiercely. The attack upon him came from our father and his Raguzian guard.
You note her missing fingers? They were lost when she caught your father's blade and then turned it upon him.
Now she was Ran Merrick's murderer?
That is not truth.
In fear and agony, she turned to Matic and insisted,
It is not!
As if unconcerned by both her brother's claim and Yvain's denial, Matic gave no response except to signal the attendant to bring another fish.
All that followed might have been prevented had we simply slain my demon sister then. But my father still had hope, and he still believed a true daughter might reside in that twisted body.
Shame clouded her brother's face.
So he applied to Ranesheb for help, as she was a warrior queen in her own right who could stand against a demon as our mother did. Ranesheb agreed. During the days she would visit with my sister in the tower to see if there was anything human in her that might be saved. And there my sister told again her lies of abuse, though she lived in luxury and was given every comfort.
Now Yvain could not refute him with the truth of what happened, or she would lose her tongue. To Matic she hissed,
Let me speak of your mother.
He denied her with a shake of his head. Because he believed her already, or because he did not trust that what she said would be truth? Pain and frustration closed her throat. Seething, she stared at her brother, made him drop his gaze away from hers. Yet he continued still.
What story did she give of Ranashev's death? That it was an attempted escape? That Yvain drew the arrow that killed Lazen?
Sadly, he shook his head.
In truth, she drove your mother mad with her whispers and lies, turning your warrior mother against my father and brothers. Ranashev rampaged through the citadel, and though my father tried to contain her, they were forced to kill her in self-defense. But my father does consider himself responsible for your mother's death because he was the one who allowed her such close contact with Yvain through so many turns of the moon.
This is not truth, she shook with rage. This is not truth.
What would you claim is the truth?
He asked her, a smirk in his eyes, though he carefully kept that smug smile from his mouth. Because he was clever and observant, and had seen that she gave no real response to anything regarding Ranashev. He might not know the reason, but he knew she would not speak of that queen. Never had she been so angry and frustrated and helpless. She had thought herself ready to battle her brother's lies, yet Maddox's vow had shackled her tongue, so she could not use truth to attack or defend. And she knew not what Matic believed, but she could see that Gareth and Cadus had been well persuaded by him. Oh, she should not have attempted to defeat her brother here. She should have commanded Matic to flee with all his warriors to the boat instead and taken their chances on the sea.
And now you are in close contact with her, Commander,
Bazir said.
Do you not ask yourself why her skin is hotter than any other?
Because I am Nyset's heir. Our bloodline runs hot.
Or why the weight of her gaze is as terrible as any stone wraith's?
Without looking up from his plate, Matic spoke over him.
Why would your father send a demon to marry the Tulehi king?
Not a breath of hesitation before Bazir's answer came.
He did not send her to marry a king. That was only the story she was given. In truth, my father was sending her to the Tulehi monks, who are better equipped to contain a demon such as she.
You say she needed containment, yet there were no monks in her carriage escort. Only one brother and a handful of soldiers.
He took a small bite of fish.
Either your father sent an unfettered demon on a journey through three realms without warning his allies of what passed through their midst, or Yvain is as she claims, a daughter sent to marry a weak king and to further your father's schemes to control yet another realm within the Alliance.
Madoc believed her. Sudden relief burst through her chest, painful and sweet, thickening into a lump in her throat.
The containment was the story we told her, that she would be married to a king. Her own ambition is what made her compliant.
Madoc choked.
Compliant?
Now he glanced up, shaking with laughter.
If ever Yvain was compliant for the duration of a journey, that is when I would think her possessed by a demon.
Bazir regarded him in sudden dismay.
I feared this. You are completely enslaved.
Another hearty laugh broke from Madoc.
That might be truth. But tell me, was it her compliance that sent the message to me in Ephorn so I would steal her away, though it meant sacrificing the throne you say she coveted?
What ambition is greater, to be queen of Tole or queen of the Burning Plains? Of course she saw an opportunity and took it.
His gaze darted to Gareth, who had been quietly watching.
Forgive me, I do not mean to say that Tole is the lesser of the two, only that she could not resist gaining control of the Parsathian army.
You think the riders would serve as a demon's puppets?
Madoc's amusement hardened, then faded altogether as he turned away from Bazir and addressed the Tolehi minister.
This sly-tongued cur only wishes to conceal the corruption that has festered in Sicia since Jalin took the throne. Nothing of what Bazir claims happened to my mother and father could he have seen with his own eyes, not while he served on the council in Ephorn. He was but a swaddling babe when Yvain was born and can be no true witness to the birth he claims was a demon's or the queen's attempt to strangle her. Yet my bride was in Sicia when my parents were murdered. She saw with her own eyes what happened to my mother and father, and so I weigh her truth more heavily than his.
The minister gave a slow nod.
Jalin gave an account of what he saw with his own eyes, yet now his son claims those were lies told to conceal a demon daughter and heir to the throne. Whatever the truth of your bride's nature, clearly the testimony given in that original investigation was false, so the council will reopen the inquiry into their murders. Best the council not waste its time,
Madoc replied.
Other matters are of greater concern. Vela told us that the destroyer returns, and dark sorcery is being used within the realms.
With my own eyes, I saw magic used to raise revenants.
Gareth glanced at Yvain.
You told Prince Cadus that it was your brother Ezel who made these revenants?
Bazir scoffed.
You cast blame on our own brother, though it is you who were there, and it is well known that a demon can also make revenants.
Only by befouling them with flesh and blood, not with spells cast from afar.
Madoc said.
With my own eyes, I saw that Yvain never had opportunity to befoul the corpses that rose and attacked us. With my own eyes, I saw a Ragusian red-footed eagle flying above us.
And Gareth had also marched against Stranix Fang, knew how those priests had used their magic to raise revenants exactly as Madoc described. His face troubled, the Tolehi minister looked from Bazir to Yvain again.
Are you certain it was Ezel and not another unknown sorcerer?
She was certain, but did she have evidence? Not even Vela had spoken a confirmation that her father and brother were serving the destroyer. I have no proof it was Ezel, she admitted. Her brother gave her a triumphant look.
No proof, because there is no proof to be had. Ezel is no sorcerer.
With my own eyes, I witnessed the goddess Vela give my bride the task of forming a great alliance to stand against the destroyer and to root out the poisonous seeds he left behind, though we have no evidence that one of those seeds is Ezel. He has lost an eye, and a Ragusian eagle was used as a familiar along the river road at the same time Yvain's family had reason to be searching for her. Neither of those is proof of his sorcery, but in combination they give compelling reason to suspect him.
Gareth nodded.
So they do.
She is the poisonous seed left behind,
Bazir insisted.
A demon raised by the destroyer himself. If there was a task given, it was to you, Commander, so that you could continue the legacy of your mother and father, who gave so much to the Alliance. It is only Yvain's influence that warps your view. She is determined to destroy each member of the royal house of Sicia one by one. Now she twists a task given by a goddess to justify killing another brother.
This time his relentless lies had not as much effect on the others, for instead of renewed doubt, Gareth asked of Madoc,
"You were given order not to harm Jalen's sons, and the Sicilian soldiers who returned with Cezanne's body claimed it was Nyset's heir who killed him. Was that truth?"
"It was," Yvain answered proudly, unsheathing the jeweled dagger at her calf and holding it up for them to see. "Madoc did not touch him. Instead, I used Cezanne's own blade to pierce his heart from behind." Anger flashed through Bazir's moonstone gaze like the flash of firelight on the silver blade.
"One by one,"
he said again, each word a hard bite instead of his usual slick tongue,
"until each of us is dead by her hand. What do you say to that, Commander?"
Madoc grunted and turned approving eyes upon her.
"I say she has made a good start."
"A good—"
Her brother halted, blinked.
"You say it was a good start?"
Unlike every other emotion he'd shown, the outrage and disbelief in that shrill echo was not faked, and the realization dawning over his face was like a dagger twisting into Yvain's heart. But despite the agonizing pain, it wasn't blood that spilled out. Only rage, 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 swelling up her throat in a howling shriek, but her mother had taught her well. Never give warning. Bazir's expression twisted with malicious glee.
"Did you not tell him, demon? He knows you murdered Lazen and Cezanne, but does your barbarian know that you also killed her?"
Yvain hurled the dagger with all her strength. No arrow it was, yet still her goddess-gifted aim was true, and the knife flew straight to Bazir's eye. Her aim was true, the throw was not. Instead of the sharpened point, the jeweled handle thunked into her target. Still, Bazir screamed in pain and slapped a hand over his eye. The dagger clattered to the table. Both Cadus and Gareth lurched to their feet, shock and alarm elongating their faces with mouths gaping open and eyebrows shooting to hairlines. The attendants scrambled, some running to help Bazir and others running to shout for help. Heart thundering, Yvain sat back. Bazir was curled over, hand cupped over his eye, and not screaming now, but resisting with gritted teeth the Tolehi minister's attempts to examine the wound. The bridge of his nose bled from a thin cut where the misthrown blade had sliced his skin. She had hoped for great spurts of blood. Those few drops were not enough. Beside her, Madoc calmly took another bite of fish.
"Did you not say we shouldn't let him provoke us?"
Her rage was not over. In a low voice, she hissed, "Why did you not let me speak of what truly happened? Why did you leave me no defense against his lies?"
"Because a warrior makes use of what she has."
"And you thought this was a good time for a lesson?"
"Battles are won or lost in throne rooms," he said in a measured tone. "And though you have great skill in slinging arrows and sparring with words, never have you taken them to a true battlefield. Now you have. This has been good practice."
Practice? Her brother had persuaded good, rational men that she was a demon, that she had murdered Ran Merrick and driven Ran Ashev to violent madness, and her brother had twisted and twisted and twisted every truth, as Yvain had told Madoc that Bazir would, and yet he still forbade her from speaking her own. "This was a true battle, and you denied me a sword and shield." For the barest moment, his gaze touched her face, and that gaze was not calm. Smoldering anger burned in his dark eyes, and she abruptly understood that Bazir's words had elicited a response. But Madoc had not let that emotion overrule his actions or his thoughts, as she had. Nothing Madoc had said to Gareth to persuade him of their truth had been unknown to her. Madoc had chosen an angle of attack that the Tolehi minister would best respond to, by telling Gareth what he'd seen with his own eyes. An angle that Yvain would have used herself had she not allowed her brother to provoke her, if she had not been so torn by frustration and rage at not being able to speak her truth. She had thought herself prepared to face her brother, yet she had not been. Perhaps because after so many years spent on the Alliance Council, Bazir had so much experience in similar battlefields. It had been a valuable lesson, yet her frustration and rage and disappointment still filled her chest and throat, choking her. Because Madoc might have let her speak of Ran Ashev and still she would have learned the lesson. Her brother would have twisted that too, but she would have eventually seen that she'd failed in her attack and tried another direction. She'd have stopped sparring with her brother and focused on Gareth, as Madoc had. And she was embarrassed. How arrogant and foolish she seemed, lecturing him on how to respond to her brother and behave through this dinner. So badly she wanted to be alone now. So desperately she wanted to find a private spot and cry until emptied of all this hot, painful emotion clogging her heart and throat. Yet she could not. Prince Cadus approached, carrying her jeweled blade. His expression seemed both abashed and amused.
My sister once threw a knife at me over dinner, too. My response was to dump a trencher of stewed boa over her head. Family has the special ability to lower even the most reasonable among us to the level of slinging blades and meats.
Maddock gave an amused grunt.
That is truth.
So many attendants swarmed around Bazir now that Ivan could not even see him. She leaned forward, trying to better catch sight of what damage there was.
Did I put out his eye?
In a reassuring voice, Cadis replied,
It will merely be swollen and bruised.
She sat back with a scowl.
Did you note his bare lie?
Maddock said, glancing up at the prince.
I did.
Cadis appeared abashed again.
As did Gareth, I think.
Yvain looked at him in amazement.
You think there was only one lie?
The prince shook his head, a dull flush on his cheeks.
Now I do not, but when he arrived and sought an audience, it seemed fair to give equal weight and consideration to his story that I did to yours.
Why? If you have bread in one hand and dung in the other, you do not have to give equal consideration of which to eat, Yvain said,
and beside her Maddock grunted in amused agreement.
That is truth, the prince admitted, but he was persuasive and consistent. Nothing he said contradicted what was known, and he never contradicted himself, except he claimed Ranashev had murdered Lazen in her rampage. But then he told the commander it was you who murdered Lazen after you angered him by showing the blade that killed Cezanne.
That had not been her intention. Yvain only meant to present evidence of the blade she'd stolen from Cezanne. But seeing it, or perhaps seeing how happily Yvain confessed to stabbing Cezanne with it, made even the more experienced Bazir lose his sense in battle, too.
What will you do with him now?
That will be a matter for the Alliance Council to resolve. In the morning I will tell Gareth to return to Efforn with him. For even though your brother is a council minister, someone who has attacked the character of a woman under my protection in such a foul manner is no longer welcome. Their purpose in coming was in search of you, who they believed had been abducted and were in danger at the commander's hands. Now they have found you under my protection. They can have no reason to remain in my city, and have no standing to compel either you or the commander to return with them.
Bazir would not return to Efforn or wait for the Alliance Council to resolve this. What had happened here only made the attack in their chambers more certain, and Bazir more desperate to succeed, because he no longer had the Tolehi minister's ear, and would soon lose the legitimizing support of the council. Unease and uncertainty clutched her heart. She thought herself prepared to face him here, and for the Parsathians to face an attack from his guard, but what if that was also only foolishness and arrogance? At the other end of the table, her brother climbed to his feet, holding a folded white cloth over his injured eye. Gleeful murder shone through Moonstone when his uncovered eye focused on her, but only for a moment, when he was forced to avert his gaze from hers. Noting her diverted attention, Cadis glanced behind. He looked down at the dagger in his hand, then to Yvain, before placing the blade in front of Maddock, as if the prince feared she might attempt to use it again. In deliberate movement, Maddock slid the dagger nearer to Yvain, the scrape of jewels and silver across the table's marble surface loud and unmistakable. By Vela's teeth, she was tempted to try. Instead, she took another lesson from Maddock and picked a bite of fish from her plate, though she would not be able to choke it down while her stomach roiled. His face a picture of relief, Cadis stepped back and clapped his hands together lightly in satisfaction.
Ah, Bazir is on his feet, so it seems all is well. I fear the excitement has interrupted plans to celebrate this evening's blessed event, however, and since the sun is nearly set, I believe the lovers must be eager to abandon us.
Not as eager as she had been, not with the terrible storm of emotions raging inside her now. With lip curled, Bazir looked upon her as he might look upon a crawling slime worm.
You are so hungry for your throne, Yvain, that you will spend your life spreading your thighs beneath that hulking, grunting brute.
No. From the corner of her eye, she saw Maddock's fist clench into a white-knuckled grip. The dagger was so near to her hand. She only flaked another bite of fish from her plate. I suspect that for much of my life I will not be beneath my grunting brute, but happily spreading my thighs to ride him. Oh, the satisfaction of seeing Bazir at a loss for a response. Not nearly as satisfying as gouts of blood would have been, or as satisfying as Maddock's fierce grin, yet still better than all that had come before. His hot gaze upon her, Maddock licked his fingers, then shoved away from the table. Yvain held out her hand, but he helped her not to her feet. Instead, he gripped her backside in his brutish hands and hauled her up, her face to his face, and urged her thighs around his waist.
"Then let us wait no longer,"
he growled. Riding him already, yet not straddling his hips as he'd sometimes carried her before so that she might feel the steel of his arousal between her thighs. Higher now he held her, and she understood why when he turned away from the table and said in low voice,
"Give me warning if your brother practices his aim,"
and throw a knife at Maddox's back. With her arms wreathing his strong neck, her fingers tangled in his thick, loose hair, she watched over his shoulder. Only after they passed out of the prince's chambers and Danaw and Bannock fell in behind them did she let go a shuddering breath and bury her face against his warm throat. His sword hand slid up her silk-covered spine to gently cup her nape, the brace of his forearm against her back holding her against him.
"Strong allies we make, you and I."
That was truth. Though he'd angered her, he'd also seen that she was faltering and had waded in to help, just as she'd frustrated him earlier that day with her decision to seek Cadus's protection, but had also found a solution to stopping her brother that did not require his warriors to sacrifice themselves, fighting 200 soldiers. Yet Yvain feared that any reply might be more sob than word, so she only nodded against his neck. He smelled of the same coconut soap that she'd used. Only the faintest scent of his sweat and horse that she'd become so accustomed to lingered on his skin.
"You learn lessons more quickly than I, and in a clever manner, too."
A deep breath lifted his chest against hers.
"I should have heeded your caution against underestimating him."
Embarrassment flooded her face. Ashamedly, she admitted, "You were more prepared than I was."
"No, will you not look at me?"
She shook her head against his throat. His smooth stride hitched.
"Are you hurt?"
How to answer that? Did she tell him of the burning in her eyes, the hot lump in her throat, the rage that still felt like a blade in her heart? She could not, but she could give him partial truth. They had just seen battle, and she'd vowed to reveal a warrior's wounds. "My pride has suffered a fatal injury." His silent laugh rumbled against her, and he pressed his face into her hair.
"It may seem fatal, but from repeated injuries to my own pride, I know that it quickly recovers, and often swells larger after the healing."
Her lips curved against his neck. Still, she did not look up, but tightened the embrace of her legs and arms.
"I underestimated him,"
Maddox said again, voice gruff against her ear.
"Never did I think a man such as Gareth could be persuaded by your brother's lies. He and Bazir have served on the council many years together. He well knows how sly-tongued the Sisian royals can be. Cadus, too, and I had perceived him as another reasonable man."
"He is," Yvain whispered thickly.
"I am not so reasonable, this I know. So if I had not already set my cock-brained mind against him, he might have persuaded me too."
Painfully, she said, "It would not be the first time you doubted my motives and intentions."
"It would not."
The muscles of his throat worked as if he swallowed gravel.
"Better that the only sounds I hear from your brother are screams from his tongueless mouth."
Yvain nodded in agreement. She would like to hear those too. His rough voice continued,
"There is no shame in his provoking you. You were also no impulsive fool. You cleverly persuaded me to marriage even while my claws dug into your throat. But with family, it is not so easy to maintain reason. In that, Cadus spoke true. Every cut is deeper, every pain sharper."
"Whether she loved them or hated them, that is so," she said thickly, and he held her tighter. Also true was that every wound inflicted on an entangled heart bled more. For Maddox's words had been a soothing balm, yet they also reopened another wound. All this day she'd been so eager for her moon night, awaiting all the pleasure he'd promised her. But it was more than simple pleasure she wanted from him now, as he held her so tightly and tended to her warrior's wounds after their battle. She yearned for the love and affection that Maddox already warned her that he would never give. But her would-be husband was a strong ally, and he would ease her need. She would be content. In the terraced gardens she had no view of the moon peeking above the eastern horizon, but Vela's full face always rose with the closing of Enam's eye. Yvain watched it sink into a fiery sea of red and orange. As the last glare of gold vanished, she turned her face against Maddox's neck again and licked a hot path up his throat. His groan in response was such satisfaction, as was the possessive grip he took of her bottom again, squeezing her soft flesh with both hands. In full sight of the warriors, never did Maddox expose what he did to her. Yet Danaw and Bannock walked behind, and she was at his front, so they could not see how he tugged free her breechcloth, leaving her bare beneath her robes, or those brutish hands lifting and lowering so that her swollen wetness rode over the ridged muscles of his stomach. Yvonne panted at his throat, and when licking was not enough, she sucked at his skin as he sometimes sucked on hers, with open lips and pressure that pulled at every sensitive part of her. At the first draw of her mouth, he grunted, as if in pain, and she did it again and again, until it seemed not like sucking but kisses that she bestowed the length of his neck. At the spiraling walk that led to their quarters, he stopped the slow ride that rubbed her most intimate flesh against him, and she knew it was because they were nearing the other warriors. She hid her flushed face against his shoulder. He could not take her to bed now, though Bazir was still at the prince's dinner and would likely wait to attack until he believed most of the Parsathian warriors slept. He might send his Ragusian guard ahead. Yet the bed was where Madoc seemed to be taking her. He passed Keeler with a gruff,
"All is ready."
"It is,"
the other warrior said.
"Then douse the lamps and send our invitations."
In the dark, Madoc carried her past the parlor, then through the vestibule that led to the bedchamber. From beyond the open balcony came the crash of waves. A cool breeze slipped through the chamber and rippled the curtains surrounding the bed. A bed where another woman waited, her small form covered in sheer robes, her long curling hair unbound, one of Vela's consorts. Yvonne frowned in confusion. "What is this?"
"A decoy,"
Madoc said softly, setting her feet to the floor.
"Your brother expects to find me distracted between your thighs, if we give the appearance that I am fucking."
Yvonne's breath hissed out in fury.
"You will not lie in a bed with another woman."
Not even in pretense or for the purpose of killing her brother. She yanked at the point of his beard so he could not mistake her warning, and when his dark gaze dropped to hers, she told him fiercely,
"If ever you touch another, I will boil the meat from your cockbone with a Siler poison before slitting your throat. You will not."
"I will not,"
he agreed with a sudden grin.
"Toric is nearest in size and appearance to me."
As the woman was similar in size and appearance to Yvonne.
"That he is,"
she relented, releasing his beard and ignoring the snorts of laughter from the Parsathians in the bedchamber with them. And now she understood the reason for the doused lamps. With curtains drawn, the shadowed figures on the bed would appear exactly as Bazir expected.
"So we conceal ourselves in the dark and kill my brother when he appears?"
"That is what I will do,"
he said, and gestured behind her.
"But you leave now for the barge ship."
She looked to see Bannock holding her cloak and Ardal with her satchel in hand. With a catch in her throat, she turned back to Madoc.
"It should be my arrow. You were forbidden to kill him."
"The council can have no argument with my killing him if he attacks our bedchamber."
As if to block what argument Yvonne might have, he took hold of her shoulders and made her face him squarely.
"I underestimated Bazir once. I will not again, and I will not risk you."
"Underestimating him is not the reason you send me away now. You made this decision before the dinner."
"Or the warriors would not have already been prepared to take her."
"I did,"
he said.
"Yet the reason is the same. I will not risk you. We assume Bazir only has the Ragusian guard with him. But although 200 soldiers cannot come through the gates, perhaps 2 can, and 2 more. We cannot know how many we will face."
"So I will stay and help, not reduce your numbers by sending Bannock and Ardal away to a boat."
"Yvonne."
The big hands that cupped her cheeks were gentle, but his voice and his expression were solid, immovable granite.
"You told me to be a warrior who made use of a queen, so I did. Now you must be the queen who makes use of her warrior and the protection he offers."
With a stubborn lift of her chin, she said, "A warrior queen needs no protection."
"You are not a warrior queen yet,"
he said gruffly,
"and you are not prepared for this battlefield."
Chest heaving with every response she wanted to make but could not push past the knot of emotion lodged in her throat, Yvonne stared up at him. No relenting she saw in his dark gaze. If anything, his resolve seemed to harden with every passing moment, as if he continuously steeled himself against her desperate need to remain. She knew he spoke truth and sense, yet,
"I wish to stay. I wish to kill him with my arrow."
"You are a warrior wishing for what you will not have."
His calloused thumbs swept her cheekbones in a soft caress.
"I will bring to you his head instead."
Throat tight, she nodded into his hands.
"This time his poisoned blade will not only be his tongue."
"I will be wary."
"But he still has his tongue. Do not allow him to use it or believe anything he has to say."
"I will be wary of that too."
She could ask for no more. Yet still dread filled her, dread and hurt and helplessness, which was the worst of all. But this was not only a night of battles, and she still had much to look forward to. "You will keep your promises to me?" Her voice sounded more uncertain than she wished, full of longing for what she could not have. "The 3 promises you made for this night?" Renewed heat flared through his eyes.
"I will."
Then there was that, at least. He would see to her pleasure in bed. He was still an ally. Yvain had hoped for more when she had persuaded him to marriage with his claws at her throat, but that was also wishing for what she would not have. She would be content. Chapter 27. Madoc. From a darkened corner of the bedchamber, Madoc had a clear view of the open balcony and the sea beyond. The full moon hung low in the southwestern sky when, from beside him, Keeler asked quietly,
"Do you think your bride was mistaken?" "No."
Many hours they had waited, but Bazir would come. Had Yvain not already persuaded Madoc, then the sly tongue's face as they'd left the prince's quarters would have convinced him. Her brother meant to steal her back and to kill Madoc, and this would be his best opportunity to do it.
"Do you think her possessed by a demon?"
The other warrior's muffled snort of laughter served as response, and it was the only response the accusation deserved, yet Madoc could not let it be the only response given.
"If you ever hear rumor that she is, even if spoken in jest, put an end to it. Calling her demon is how her family means to discredit her and prevent her from creating new alliances."
Keeler's nod shifted subtle shadows behind his head. With moonlight shining into the bedchamber through the balcony, they were not as well hidden as before, still concealed by darkness, but every movement would betray them.
"I will tell the others too."
Madoc grunted quiet approval. His friend said nothing more for a moment, then he dryly observed,
"Keen vision she has."
At that understatement, a silent laugh worked through Madoc, for indeed she did. Not her foremother's gift of sight beyond what was seen, but clearly seeing everything within sight.
"Had you no idea?"
Keeler asked. Madoc shook his head.
"Nor does Yvain, I suspect. She assumes everyone has visions such as hers."
For she had always been in her tower surrounded by walls. No reason would she have to believe her sight better than anyone else's. And in many ways, she had only begun to learn to see. So even what was clear within her sight, she did not always understand what she looked at.
"Her eyes can be put to good use upon the sea. We will know if any other ships are friend or foe, and upon the burning plains we will know who rides in the distance. Is her vision so keen even in the dark?"
Madoc considered that, beginning with the first night when the Trapjaw had attacked their camp. Uncertain she'd seemed then, struggling to see through the shadows.
"I think not. Still, it is a valuable gift." "It is,"
Madoc agreed, as Yvain herself was. From the bed came a soft feminine moan. As they'd prepared for Bazir's attack, young Torek had insisted that the lingering weakness from the Revenant's poison would not affect his ability to wield his sword. That he'd well proven this night, for very little that Madoc heard from behind those curtains sounded like pretense. The moan also drew Keeler's gaze to the bed and a frown to the warrior's face.
"Dawn approaches."
And the moon would set as the sun rose, Madoc knew well.
"It does. Go to your bride. I will finish this for you. I have vowed to bring her his head. So you will, even if you are not the one to remove it from his neck. I will deliver his head to you in a ribbon-wrapped box, and you will place it at her feet."
Then kiss his way up her legs before fully claiming her. So badly Madoc wanted that, for her brother's head was not the only promise he'd made. He'd also promised to see to her pleasure, so deep inside her, long and hard until she came for him again and again. Yet of the promises he'd made, it was the last Madoc feared most, to not believe anything from Bazir's poisoned tongue. For Madoc had truly underestimated her brother. Yvain had accused him of denying her a sword and shield by not allowing her to speak, yet her silence had been Madoc's own shield. Family cut deeper, and the rage he'd known simply listening to Bazir's lies about Yvain and his parents had been enough. If she had spoken more about his mother, and Bazir had twisted those words again, Madoc knew not if the sly-tongued dog would have found a weakness in him. As it was, he already struggled with doubt, not in the claims that she was a demon, but from words as yet unspoken, because Yvain had stopped them with her knife. But even unspoken, Bazir's intention had been clear. He meant to accuse Yvain of killing their mother. And that accusation had found weakness in Madoc. It had wriggled into him as a worm through a crack. He did not believe it. He would not believe it. Yet his mind returned to it again and again. Though it could not be true, everything she'd said of Queen Vysen was evidence against it. Yvain had loved her mother as Madoc had loved his own. But that worm still wriggled in his brain, a sly tongue wriggling behind it. Better that he never allowed Bazir to speak again, but that was not the plan. A seabird's warble floated in from outside, joining the song of the waves. Danos signaled that the soldiers finally approached. Approached with the intention of killing his warriors and taking his bride. Many battles Madoc had fought. Many times he'd waited for an enemy's advance, felt the rush through his veins when they finally appeared, his blood thundering and hot. Never had it been as this, for they intended to kill his warriors and take his bride, to return her to Jalen's prison where she would know suffering at her father's hands. This night Madoc would defy all that the goddess had claimed. Though not yet a king, Madoc would protect her. Then he would have her, and he would not lose her. Another warble from Dano. The soldiers had chosen the spiral entry, making their way up the curving ramp that led to the main entrance of their quarters. Ragusians were mountain men and no stranger to climbing, so Madoc had anticipated their scaling the balcony to the bedchamber. It offered the greatest surprise and allowed them the best vantage prior to attack. Perhaps because Bazir was no Ragusian and could not climb. By Temra's fist, Madoc prayed that Kerr was with them and not waiting for a signal that the deed was accomplished. Swiftly, Madoc abandoned the shadows for the position chosen if the attack did not come through the balcony. Keeler followed, feet silent. The soldiers would likely split their numbers after entering the nest, half seeking out the Parsathian guard to kill them, and the remainder attacking the bedchamber through the vestibule. Quick and quiet they would need to be, giving the Parsathians no opportunity to raise an alarm or to reach for weapons and shields. The door between the corridor and vestibule was closed, yet the vestibule was open to the bedchamber. No sound could Madoc hear from the corridor. Southerners wore so much metal armor that always they clinked and jingled like a purse of coins. The stealth of these gave indication of experience. Torek's grunting came louder, faster, creaking the bed frame, luring the soldiers in, giving them false belief that their target was well distracted. Madoc slipped into the vestibule, then sprang against the wall adjacent to the closed door. His fingers caught a marble protrusion made from the carving of a shell. He hauled himself upward, using another carving to climb higher. Into the corner of the vaulted ceiling he wedged himself, hands and feet braced against the adjoining walls. Keeler took position on the other side. Here the moonlight did not reach them, only the faintest glow spilled into the vestibule below. The Ragusian soldiers likely expected that any Parsathians guarding Madoc and his bride would stand watch in this small chamber. The most danger and uncertainty the soldiers faced here, not knowing how many warriors waited beyond the closed door. They came as Madoc would have sent his warriors through, in a silent rush of four soldiers, swords at ready, in a sweeping burst that covered each corner of the vestibule. Finding it empty, they hurried to the bedchamber door and took new defensive positions at either side of it. All wore leather armor instead of metal plates. None wore helms, which would have gleamed in the moonlight. A gray-haired man looked to be captain of the others. He'd let the other three into the vestibule and now knelt by the bedchamber door, his gaze scanning that room, and was bold enough to peer past the frame of the door to check whether any Parsathian stood against the nearest wall. Sly nudges passed between the other soldiers when Torek's grunts quickened as if nearing release. The soldiers stilled to attention again when the captain held up a fist, then splayed his fingers. Two more soldiers swept silently into the vestibule. Bazir boldly strode in after them, carrying a sword and wearing no armor. Instead, he was dressed as if coming from the prince's dinner, though that was long over. Only the top of Bazir's head was visible, but Madoc could easily picture his enraging smirk. Confident they all must have been that no Parsathian guards waited inside the bedchamber, for the captain allowed Bazir through the door first. Sheathing his sword and arming himself with a crossbow, the captain and three other soldiers flanked him, leaving two in the vestibule to halt any Parsathians who might come down the corridor. Madoc found no fault with the Ragusian captain's strategy, except that he had not looked up. Lingering by the bedchamber entrance, as if to watch the attack, the two soldiers in the vestibule had not yet taken post by the corridor door, nor would they ever. As one, Madoc and Keeler sprang from their hiding places. No weapons did they draw, for they wore them. Silently, Madoc landed behind the nearest soldier, and with silver claws ripped out the man's throat to the spine. Hot blood spurted over Maddox's fingers and splashed the wall. With his opposite hand, he caught the soldier's sword as it fell from his grip. The soldier convulsed, hands flying to his neck. If any scream he made, it emerged as a bubbling wheeze from his gaping windpipe. Matic eased the thrashing body to the floor. Metal armor would have clattered against marble tiles, but the leather armor muffled the soldier's dying throes, and what little noise remained was concealed by Torek's heavy grunts. So too did his grunts conceal the next attack. Like raptors, Matic and Keeler bolted from the vestibule. The group of soldiers had crossed half the distance to the curtained bed, moving silently in a fanned formation that could better keep watch on the darkened corners of the large chamber. But it was from behind that death came for the two soldiers at either end of the fan. No attempt did Matic make at silence now. So near to the others, not even Torek's grunts could mask the tortured wheeze or the wet thunk of throat flesh that Matic threw to the floor. No attempt did he make to stop this soldier's sword from clanging against marble. Instead of letting the body fall to the floor, he anchored the dying man against his chest, holding him upright with silver-clawed fingers cradling the soldier's jaw, letting the others have a clear view of what awaited them. And using the body as a shield against the crossbow leveled at his heart when the captain spun around, even in the moonlight, he saw the blood-bare tension that paled the captain's face.
"Abandon the sly tongue,"
Matic told him.
"I will let you flee by the balcony."
As he spoke, sudden silence came from the bed, leaving the bedchamber filled with the crash of waves and the heaving of breaths. Though Matic had not expected the Ragusian to possess any honor, he was not sorry when rage and determination chased the terror from the captain's skin. But although flushed and shaking, neither the captain nor the remaining soldier fired his crossbow at Matic or Keeler, wasting the bolt on the corpses the Parsathians used as shields. Instead, the captain and soldier drew closer together, providing better protection for Bazir. In the council chambers, Bazir had scrambled fearfully away from Matic's approach. The two guarding him would slow Matic no more than the table had, yet no fear did he see in the sly tongue now. Instead, there was only familiar arrogance and disdain. That cur's moonstone eyes gleamed with it, one eye partially slitted closed, swollen and bruised.
"If you are here, who then mounts Yven in that bed? There is your answer to why we encountered none of his guard, Holern,"
Bazir said to the captain.
"The barbarians have not laid a trap for us. Instead, they take turns between my sisters."
A hoarse scream from deeper within the nest sounded, followed by savage growls, as the remaining Ragusian soldiers found the sleeping quarters where Fasad and his wolves waited. Bazir's head cocked, listening. When silence fell again, he said cheerfully,
"Perhaps you had it right, Holern."
The captain's jaw clenched, but he only told the remaining soldier to keep an eye on the bed, and his own gaze did not move away from Matic and Keeler, perhaps hoping for rage to overcome Matic's sense too. That would not happen. It mattered not what Bazir said.
"She killed our mother. Did she tell you that?"
the sly tongue asked. But the words were nothing, no more substantial than a breeze, because Matic expected them.
"How familiar it must have sounded to you. A queen tragically killed in a failed escape attempt. Is that what you told him, Yven?"
Raising his voice, he called toward the bed. As he continued, true anger seemed to burn away his smirk.
"Or did you give to him a false story so he would not see through your schemes? Perhaps a tale where our father killed her, though his use for our mother was not done? Or perhaps you blamed Lazed or Cezanne because you have made certain they cannot defend themselves against your lies?"
A failed escape attempt. Harder the words blew, a gale wind battering his heart, yet Matic stood firm against them.
"What use would Jalen still have for your mother?"
That smirk returned.
"To get another daughter upon her. The sickly heir she whelped was inadequate."
Keeler's grin flashed through the blood, painting his face like a blade through flesh.
"Vila does not find her inadequate."
Neither did Matic. Bazir gave a dismissive laugh.
"You place your trust in a goddess who abandoned us to the destroyer? Where was Vela when he killed Queen Venice, the only warrior to ever draw his blood? And when he reanimated Sissia's beloved queen as a demon, where was the goddess then? But it was not only Sissia that Vela had forsaken, not only the nations of this alliance, all of the western realms she abandoned to his destruction. Yet you truly expect her to assist us now?"
Matic cared nothing of what the goddess did, only what he believed Yven might accomplish. Those moonstone eyes sharpened, so shrewd and yet so unlike the cleverness of his sisters.
"If you wish to survive the destroyer's return, do not look to Yven. Join with my father and Ezel and bow to Enam, and you and your people might have a chance."
By serving the destroyer? by welcoming his rule and more of Enam's corrupt magic?
I think not,
Matic said.
So instead you will follow a queen who is sickly and weak? What fool would do such a thing?
Her brother laughed again, and Matic knew the shame of having thought and said almost exactly the same. To the bed, Bazir called again.
You have truly enslaved him. Perhaps you are no demon, Yven, but you have proved yourself more persuasive than I ever believed. First you clear a path to a husband by setting a trap for his queen and king. Then you convince him to marry their murderer. Are you certain you do not wish me to take her back to Sissia?
The last was directed to Matic, as it all had been, he knew, trying to stoke his rage to fuel his doubt. And enraged Matic was. Impulsive he was not. Neither were his warriors. Dana had fought beside him far longer than she'd been part of his guard. Matic knew the only delay had been the moonlight, as Dana found route to the balcony where the shadow she cast would not expose her movements. The moon was low and shone directly into the bedchamber, so she would be forced to find a wide angle of approach. So wide she was still nowhere in sight when he heard the thwap of her bowstring. Vela had called her the Dragon Sting. So she was this night, as her arrow pierced the soldier's back, flinging him forward with the impact. A bad angle she must have had on the captain, or she misguessed the direction he would turn in response to the soldier's cry. Her next arrow embedded into the leather armor protecting his shoulder, yet it was enough to make him stumble and lose his steady aim. With a roar, Keeler dropped his corpse shield and hurled his axe. The blade struck the captain's chest with such force that he flew back off his feet and was dead before he landed. Bazir, they left for Matic. Now that sly-tongued cur fell back from Matic in desperate retreat, holding his sword out before him. This time Matic would not underestimate him or forget Yven's warning about poisoned blades. The body he still carried as shield, and as he passed the fallen captain, he swept up his crossbow. Bazir's moonstone eyes widened.
You cannot!
With a feathered bolt jutting from his right shoulder, the cur scuttled back nearer to the balcony, switching his sword to his left hand. Little practice he seemed to have with that grip, wobbling and weak, slashing wildly. Bazir hit the corpse shield that Matic carried once, twice, before lunging forward, as if intending to run the body through and strike Matic with a poisoned blade. Matic shoved the corpse at him as Bazir impaled it. Overbalanced by the weight on his blade, Bazir's grip failed. The weapon slipped from his hand and the cur stumbled. Matic caught him by the throat, claws digging in.
Her only return to Sissia will be to claim her throne. Never will your brothers or your father touch her again.
Gasping and struggling, Bazir wheezed desperately.
She will betray you as she did my mother and yours.
Stabbing his fingers between those open lips, Matic ripped out the wriggling worm of a tongue and released him. Choking, blood pouring from his mouth, Bazir looked at him stunned. Ragged sounds came from his throat, not screams, as if still trying to speak. Matic yanked Bazir's sword from the soldier's corpse and skewered the cur's gut with it. A quick death it was, quicker than it should have been and quicker than Matic would have liked. No doubt the blade had been poisoned. As Bazir thrashed on the floor, green foam bubbled through the blood coming from his mouth. Then abruptly he stilled, moonstone eyes glazed and unseeing.
It is done,
Matic announced. Torek opened the curtain, revealing Vela's consort behind him, and the other two occupants of the bed who had waited through this long night, Gareth and Cadus. Both wore grim expressions, though when the prince's gaze took in the carnage, horror and sickness joined it.
You heard with your own ears?
Jaw tight, the Tolehi minister nodded.
Sissia and Rugus will betray the alliance to save their own skins. Jalen, not Sissia.
Nothing Matic had seen of Yven's people suggested that they supported their regent, only feared him. He knew not if Rugus was the same, but that they would discover when Ezel was dead. Matic yanked Keeler's axe from the captain's chest.
Carry that knowledge back to the council, but travel with care. If they can, Jalen and Ezel will have you killed before you reach Ephorn.
As they will also come for you.
So they will.
So the race to the burning plains would resume.
All of Sissia and Rugus against Severn warriors? Come with me instead and speak to the council. Let them also hear Nyset's heir.
I will not risk her.
200 soldiers will serve as escort.
And do you trust that Bazir has not filled their heads with his lies on the journey here? Can you assure me that she will not be set upon by soldiers who believe her a demon? You believed it for a time.
When that silenced the minister, Matic turned back to Bazir's corpse.
When you remove this body, beware the poisoned blade.
Green spittle,
Cadus said, carefully lifting the hem of his robes and stepping around pools of blood as he moved closer to examine it.
Psylocke venom?
Odd choice if it was. That from Vela's consort, who had remained steady through this night. The venom will kill an opponent, but not quickly. That was truth. The poison only weakened those it infected until they fell asleep and woke a brainless beast.
Not so odd if he meant to turn the alliance against me. Weakened, I could have been defeated, and he could have taken Yven, and after waking, I would have slaughtered everyone in the palace with no one aware the cause was poison.
And no doubt Bazir would have claimed Madoc killed Yven in his rampage so no one would look for her afterward.
Will he wake?
Wondered Cadus, frowning. Madoc gave answer by chopping off Bazir's head. Chapter 28 Madoc. Cadus's fastest horses they rode to the docks with an escort to show them the shortest route. Dawn lightened the eastern sky. Over the western horizon, the full moon blushed pink. No hired barge ship did they have now. Drom's prince had offered Yven his protection, and as they'd waited for Bazir's attack, he'd first attempted to persuade Madoc to remain in the city. When that failed, Cadus had insisted on the honor of continuing his protection as they sailed north. His own ship he'd offered for their use, an offer Madoc gladly took, for they truly were in a race, and the prince's vessel would cross the water more swiftly. The change had been made during the night. Instead of a wide barge ship, this ship more resembled a swan, with a great sail furled against the curved mast of the neck. Carrying a jute sack, Madoc strode up the gangway. Artel and Bannock waited, and the deck was busy with crew, but no Yven.
"Where is she?"
"The royal quarters," Artel said, pointing to the tail of the boat. "She left to prepare for your arrival after seeing her brother felled." In surprise, Madoc glanced to the shore. The nest he could see, a pale shell nestled amid the terraced gardens, but he had not thought her sight able to pierce the dark. Yet it had not been dark, he realized. The full moon had shone into the bedchamber, as if Vela herself had allowed Yven to witness her brother's death.
"The horses?"
"Aboard."
"Then tell the captain to set sail."
Striding the length of the deck, he looked to the western horizon again. Never had the moon seemed to sink so quickly. Not much time would he have to prepare Yven for a fucking, and now Vela's gift of cockmonger's oil seemed not such an insult, but necessary to ease his entry, if Madoc had no time to use his mouth and fingers. His cock only needed to breach her cunt before the moon set, then he would keep his promises to her. His clawed fingers left crimson marks on the pale wood door he slid open, ducking his head as he entered. If not for the low ceiling and creaking of the ship, he might have been in the prince's palace again. No doors or walls divided the space. Silk screens gave privacy to the bed and the bath. The rear of the chamber lay open to a private deck, and beyond that, the sea. Only a small distance separated the moon and the water. A steep flight of stairs descended to the recessed floor of the chamber. Skipping the steps, Madoc leapt down and could stand properly without hitting his head. The jute sack dripped blood onto the polished wooden planks as he crossed to the bed. Yet it was from behind the bath screen that Yven emerged, long curling locks unbound and clad only in a robe. No linens wrapped her limbs. Her cheeks were flushed, her hardened nipples pebbled beneath silk, her soft bottom lip trapped between her teeth as she watched his approach. He reached into the sack. Fingers tangled in matted hair, he set her brother's head upon a table.
"It is done."
"I saw," she said huskily, and held out her hand as if to lead him to bed. He swept her up into his arms instead, carrying her behind the screen. More steep steps led up to the wide dais supporting the bed. He lifted her onto the platform where she stood taller than he, his face on level with her breasts.
"Where is Vela's potion?"
"In my satchel." She caught hold of the spalders armoring his shoulders before he could go in search of it. "But my sheath needs no oiling." Because she had come here to prepare herself as soon as she'd seen her brother fall. Madoc assumed that meant to bathe and to undress. Now he drew her fingers into his mouth, gave himself a taste of the sweetness that lingered at their tips. Her breath shuddered, a sound of hot desire and soft humor. "Our bed truly will look like a battlefield as you come to me wearing blood and claws and sword." With the two fingers on her right hand, she swiped through the gore painting his chest, and her smile diminished to a sad curve. "Though I must pose no real threat, for you do not shield your heart against me." What use would such armor serve? Already she had reached in and taken hold of it.
"Only a fool would underestimate you, Yvonne,"
he told her gruffly. Matic had been a fool once. The slightest smile returned as if she believed he spoke platitudes. "You used a shield against my brother."
"The corpse?"
His claws skimmed up the outsides of her thighs, bloodied silver over slippery silk. Her scent reached him, faint coconut and stronger anise, as if she'd applied that Sisian perfume to her throat and breasts before his arrival.
"My true shield was your warning to avoid his poisoned blades, else I might think as he wanted me to, and believe that you betrayed and killed your mother."
She became utterly still. "What do you believe instead?"
"That you had painful reason,"
he said gently, hands curving over her hips. "A reason that her brother had wrapped in other lies, perhaps. That a demon had possessed her mother's weakened body, or she'd been maddened, as Bazir claimed Ranashev had been, and Yvonne killed her mother in defense of her own life."
"And no other choice."
Never had her walls erected so swiftly, so visibly. She neither moved nor spoke, yet he could see and hear the barrier she put up between them in the hardening of her moonstone eyes and the deep slowing of her breaths. A poisonous ache filled his chest. These walls he'd battered down, and now they stood again, as if he'd never touched her, as if she'd never invited him in. Then she yanked on his beard and hissed, "I told you not to believe what he said." Not even in bed yet, and already the battle was here, with a pointed blade piercing his heart.
"You also said he would frame lies with truth to better persuade me to his view, that view I saw for the lie it was."
"Yet your view is still that I killed her?"
"Of everything he said about you, only that held a ring of truth."
And was confirmed by her reactions, first in the throwing of her knife, and now because she did not deny it. Every time he'd suggested she had a part in his own mother's death, Yvonne immediately denied it. Always she denied it. Yet here she only yanked at his beard for listening to Bazir. Hoarsely he asked,
"Did you kill her during a failed escape?"
For an endless moment, she stared down at him from walls so high he could not read her face. Then she drew a breath that was agony. As if suffering, not at her father's hands, but at his. Sudden dread closed his throat. His fingers tightened on her hips, but she pulled out of his grip, stepping back with a cold smile curving her lips. "I think you like that view. It fits so neatly with the one you already have of me." Her chin lifted. "Very well, let us frame it that way. I did kill my mother during a failed escape." She would not have. He knew she would not have. Yet Matic also did not believe she was lying. In a raw voice, he said,
"I cannot believe
anything I say. Yes, I know. Because I am the foul, treacherous vessel for your vengeance, and you'd best hurry and make use of me. If you don't fuck my sheath full of your seed now, you will have no opportunity again."
Turning her back to him, she bent over the side of the bed and braced her elbows. "You need not even look at my scheming face while you mount me." By Temra's fist, sheer frustration gritted his teeth. It should not be like this without resolution between them, with her walls still so high. Yet little time they had. The moon's chin rested on the horizon. So he would breach her quickly, then slow until they no longer battled but were allies again. The low ceiling above the bed would give him no proper room to stand on the dais, so it was on his knees that Matic settled in behind her small, rounded ass. Her anger with him must have burned away even her shyness. When he swept aside the skirt of her robe, baring her bottom and legs to his gaze for the first time, barely a tremble moved through her breaths. The only shaking was Maddox's, need so hot and urgent that he did not trust the steadiness of his clawed fingers against her most delicate skin. With his mouth he tested her readiness, a long deep lick through her glistening cleft that sent Yvonne swaying forward on a gasping moan that she quickly muffled against the bed. Hot and slick his tongue found her. And when he suckled on her clit, her shaking began to match his. With more time, he'd have made her come in this way first. Instead, he slowly rose from kneeling into a crouch, leaving a hungry trail of open-mouthed, biting kisses up over the curve of her ass. The silks tucked into his belt shredded beneath his claws, freeing the steel length of his cock. Anticipation surged down his shaft like the stroke of a tight fist. He reached the edge of her robe and his tongue slicked over the dimple at the base of her spine. Yvonne flinched, the barest tensing of her muscles. Matic frowned down at what had caused that reaction, a faint welt he'd felt beneath his tongue. But it wasn't a welt. A scar slashed across her upper left buttock, not unlike the stripes from the bowstring on her forearm, though thicker. newly healed but apparently still sensitive.
"What is this?"
Carefully, not touching the scar and mindful of his claws, he traced the skin alongside the stripe with the pat of his thumb. "The punishment from my father for sending a message to your parents, one you'd likely approve." Each word was bitter and hot, punctuated by her heaving breaths. "Or perhaps you think I deserved worse. Both of you decided to strip me of skin for it, but you deflayed me and tossed me over the Sisian wall. My father only used a whip." Punishment? A mild one from Jalen, compared to her knee and her fingers. Yet even this single stripe was more than she'd deserved. Any punishment was more than she'd deserved, and Matic recalled saying what vengeance he'd planned.